California, 103.
My name is Darian Gold, and I teach Pilates. From my very first Pilates lesson in 1992, I knew the Pilates method would rock the world, and it has. Welcome to All Things Pilates, where each week you'll hear from a new guest who shares his or her Pilates knowledge. We explore the ongoing evolution of the Pilates method, and my goal is to present all aspects of our beautiful, complex, and life-affirming profession.
Are you tired?
Inside Petaluma, I am Cindy Thomas, here with my co-hosts, Janice Gooder-Thompson and Jason Davies. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
It's good to be back.
And how was Quincy?
Quincy was very warm.
Yes.
It was very hot up there, but it was great music. I was at the High Sierra Music Festival, my annual trip to Quincy. Lots of great music, 4 days of music.
I told you, we spent many Thanksgivings up in Quincy when our daughters lived there. So I get all, you know, my pots and pans, and, you know, we go up there and we cook in these little cabins that they lived in. And one time we went to Safeway and bought a Thanksgiving dinner, and it was the worst food for Thanksgiving. But it was really fun because we were sitting in our little crates in a little cabin having dinner, and it was a prepared, but it was lousy food, but great company and a lot of fun.
What kind of lousy food?
Oh, like a turkey. It was for Thanksgiving. We ordered a Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, okay.
You know, for the grocery store.
Oh, you mean at the...
It's a, the local
it was, it was a Thanksgiving dinner, but it was just...
It was not
very, not
like my
not
Thanksgiving
tasty,
dinner.
Yeah.
No. But it was kind of the experience that was really fun.
Oh.
You know, and then you'd run outside. It always snowed during Thanksgiving up there every year we went.
I don't like snow.
Oh, well, we had a good time.
I hate snow.
Yes.
What about you, Jason? What did you guys do for the 4th?
For the 4th of July, what did we do? We just stayed home and played music and stuff.
Okay.
So we didn't even do fireworks. In fact, at the last minute, I was like, really, kids? You don't want to go down and see some fireworks? I mean, they're doing them. Don't you want to see them? And they didn't care.
Patty said it was one of the best shows she'd ever seen. Patty at the station.
Yeah. I couldn't get anyone to leave the house.
That's what I heard. But, you know, I'm not the fireworks fan.
Well, I was very happy that Coco's first year with fireworks.
Mm.
She laid on the bed and then heard some crackle and lifted her head up and looked around and then put her head back down. And then it started, you know, a little bit louder, and she just started growling and barking at it. And then she'd go outside and bounce to the, you know, fence and start barking and go back in and go to sleep. So I felt very lucky that our dog didn't have
problems. She was trying to protect you.
She was, exactly.
Yeah.
But,
mine throw up and hide under the bed.
That's not
why
funny.
I board them every year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. For most people, it's horrible. So I feel really grateful.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're a little bit further away from them. All fireworks are banned in our immediate area that
right.
I live in.
Really?
Yeah, okay. You can't have them in Victoria.
Is that a homeowners association
no.
rule? Or?
I think it's a city
no,
thing, right?
The city did this. And so, I mean, most of the west side
yeah.
is actually off limits for fireworks.
Yeah.
I did not know
so,
that.
No, that's been in place for quite a few years. You can go on the website and
yeah.
find out where that is.
Yeah, so...
City website.
So we're used to not having them in our immediate vicinity, but we always hear them. But this year, it didn't seem to be as bad.
Yeah.
Well, I know over the fence, usually these guys are always doing these illegal ones, and
yeah.
they did not this year.
Yeah.
And so that was quite unusual.
Yeah, when people talk about, well, you know, if you ban legal fireworks, it's not going to do anything about the illegal ones. But the point of what some people don't realize is that it makes it more difficult for enforcement if you have legal ones and illegal ones.
That's
because
right.
the police have to separate and figure out which is which. Whereas if there's just, sorry, no fireworks at all, it's much easier for the police to just go and crack down.
We had a neighbor that worked for Lucasfilm, and I don't know how many thousands of dollars of illegals that he would buy, but we would have an amazing, you know, show in our cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
And, you know, the police finally started coming because it was getting out of hand, and that was, you know, when the kids were 20 years ago. And in retrospect, It was not smart.
Yeah. You know, even the safe and sane ones. I think I mentioned this a couple of shows ago. You can enhance those. My neighbors would create these things with gasoline and little plastic bottles.
Yeah, I used to do that.
Yeah. Oh.
Really, Jason?
You don't look like a pirate.
Oh, I was. That's why I'm not anymore. I got through that, you know, in my youth.
That's good.
Yeah, I was into it. I mean, who doesn't like to blow things up when you're a kid?
Well, actually, we used to have chemistry sets, and when we lived in a Quonset, we were in my brother's room, and we did a chemistry experiment, and there was always this black rim from the container blowing up. Yeah, so we all did. You're right.
Yeah, my dad made pipe bombs when he was a youth, and he had to go talk to a judge.
And why did he make pipe bombs?
Because he knew how to do it, and he sold them. The story I learned from my grandparents was they went, you know, they had to go to police and I guess a judge ultimately, and they said, well, don't you understand, you know, the danger of these? Like, well, yeah, but I'm not setting them off. I'm selling them to other people to do that.
All right, let's move on. Jason's becoming much too colorful in my eyes.
I just want to bring something up. I was reading in the Press Democrat.
Okay.
It's Safe Haven on the Road, and it's about, instead of calling an Uber driver, you actually sign up for a driver, but it's a women's group. And so
I saw that.
Yeah, and so a woman would
call.
Women
driving women.
Exactly. And so they've already been vetted, so you feel safe when you get in the car, because it's just saying this Renee Cooper, who started the ride-sharing service, Women Driving Women 3 years ago, drives this woman, 77-year-old, from her home in Windsor to her chemotherapy appointment at Kaiser.
Yeah.
And so I think it's good, because women need to feel safe.
Right.
And in the Trump era, I'm not sure if we feel safe anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to think that the iRide program here in Petaluma, through the Petaluma People Services Center, I think iRide is equally as safe for our elders.
I think so, too. And I appreciate, because you are
one of those drivers, yes.
Yeah. So thank you for doing that.
Yes. And anybody else who wants to volunteer some time, you just use your car. All you have to do is have a DMV report submitted to PPSC, and they kind of do a little background check on you for the safety of the passengers. And it's pretty cool, because you get to hear some fun stories from people who are more senior than us.
Right.
But not always more senior than us. I think you have to be 65 and older to.
They're more senior than me so far.
Yeah.
Only by about a year.
Yeah. Okay.
Jason,
let's not
baby.
Talk age.
Yeah. Let's not. Okay.
Okay. That. Okay. So we have a guest today. Do we have any announcements? I'd like to get through any announcements.
Sonoma County Conservation Action is having their gala tomorrow night, and if people want tickets, they can still get tickets. They're $70, and at the door, they're going to be $90. So you would go to the Sonoma County Conservation Action website to buy a ticket. Jared Huffman is going to be the guest speaker.
Where is the event?
It's going to be at the Friedman Center in Santa Rosa.
Okay.
And it's from 5 to...
whenever.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever the wine runs out.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, and then there's an auction, and, you know, it's an environmental group, so it's a good group to know of and to be part of.
All right, good.
That's it.
Anything from you, Jason?
In deference to our guest, I'll withhold. There was a few news items, but no worries.
Go ahead.
Well, just two news items that are kind of related. One is that there was a massive mussel die-off. I don't know if you heard about
that.
It's pretty alarming because of the increased warming that's happening. We had a whole bunch of dead mussels, and this was in Bodega Bay.
Yeah.
So up to 70% of the specimens died in the hardest hit, most exposed areas of the mussel bed along a mile or so. That has been surveyed so far. The alarm is not just over the enormous number of mussels that basically cook in the sun. In addition, mussels are a foundation species that provides habitat for other organisms, creating a structure in which they live. So it's a pretty, startling reality here that global warming is an issue. And dovetailing that, I thought was a nice piece of news from our city council. city is planning to require builders to add more solar panels and ditch natural gas hookups. So the city's talking about ways that we can incentivize and update building codes, incentivize developers to use solar panels and not have natural gas hookups. Again, one of the many steps that our city is trying to move towards in addressing the realities of climate change.
Nice.
So these are a couple articles you can read about on Petaluma 360 that I thought were interesting.
Okay. Alrighty then, it's time to introduce our guests, and I'd like to welcome Rob Tomaszewski, who is the KPCA radio station manager here at PCA. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. Good to be here. Thanks for having
you
me.
You had a great voice.
It changes. It'll change. I'm not used to talking this early in the morning.
Oh, boy.
A late night person.
The stories are about
to begin. Wait till he's completed his coffee.
No, actually, just plain water.
Oh, it's just water. Okay.
Just water in the studio in a closed container.
Yes,
that's what we have.
Very and here's mine on the ground because I've been accused of making too much noise with my water container.
So I have an announcement, though. In keeping with the general what's going on in Petaluma and maybe the North Bay, is there's a candlelight vigil tonight in protest of the family separations at the border.
Oh.
6 p.m. at the library parking lot, and it's also there's one in Santa Rosa, and I think that's at 7 p.m. So I'm going to be there.
Library, 6 o'clock.
Yeah, and I don't know. That sounds like a kind of an out-of-the-way. It's not like the corner of Washington and Petaluma Boulevard,
right,
where there's a lot of activity and traffic. And this is in the parking lot of the library, which is pretty invisible to the street.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Well,
yeah, that's
not to mention at 6 o'clock, it's pretty light outside for a candlelight.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if we have fireworks.
Those illegal ones
I'm
that we save
my
for next
to your
year.
House on 4th of July.
Our house is pretty.
Well, I know that I've contacted friends of mine and just let them know that in case they need a safe house, that they're always welcome. And I know that's, you know, in Petaluma, but you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, they're promising a crackdown starting this weekend.
Sunday, San Francisco is one of them, but a lot of the mayors of the communities around the United States are saying, no, we do not want you coming in here, and that the police are not going to participate. Yeah. The local police are not going to participate in this. In Texas, of course, they were going to do one in New Orleans, not realizing that what was going on in New Orleans, which is flooding.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how inept this administration is.
Yeah.
So.
Well, at least they're not going to put the immigration question on the census.
Yeah,
right.
I figured that one out.
Yeah.
Well, these are frightening times.
Yes, they are.
So anyway, back to Petaluma.
Back to Petaluma.
And get off the tangent here.
There I am. No,
yeah.
We were making announcements.
Sure.
This is something that's been on my mind for a long time, and it's like, how do you do something? Well, here's something, a small thing, but it's. You got to do something.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
anyway. Thank you for that.
Yeah,
sure.
It's so interesting to understand history and how we're just repeating what's been happened in the past. And it takes, like 70, 80 years to have the same thing happen again, finding a group of people that we're going to be against and they're the enemy. And children and adults in cages is, I can't believe it's happening in this country. But it has for a long time.
Well, this is the reason a lot of people have mixed feelings about supporting that recent bill.
That's right.
To put more money, ostensibly to help out these people, but it's, creating more cages also?
Well, the problem is privatized prisons, and that's been going on for probably at least a decade or longer in this country. And so privatizing prisons, we're actually paying people to keep people in jail, and that incentivizes people to keep in jail.
Homeland Security, though.
Well, no, I know, but that's going to private prisons also, and these private cages down at the border.
Anyway, it's a mess.
Yeah.
See what I started? See what I started?
I appreciate that. Thanks for that.
I stir things down. No, that's what I try to do as station manager, is stir things up a little bit.
But look at the great things our city is trying to do despite that. So even though we have this terrible administration in Washington, our city is taking action on climate change, and that's a good thing. So.
I'm
going to change it up here. Sam, hi.
Thanks for having me. Should we start it now?
Thank you for being here.
Start over.
No, so I introduced you as our station manager here, but it goes a lot deeper than that. You actually were responsible for helping PCA create KPCA. Well, not so much the license, but the actual studio here.
Right. Yeah. There was no radio station when I started here.
No radio station.
Just the plans.
It was somebody's, and yours included, passion and dream that this would PCA would one day have a radio station.
Yeah.
And
So take us from the start when you got here. What'd you do?
Well, I was starting a new career. Let's say my whole life has been in the show business, sound engineering, tour managing, production management, theater, and I had been working at Teatro Zanzani in San Francisco, which ran for 12 years, and I helped build that place down there. And when we got kicked off the pier, I helped take it down, so that entire run. And when that closed, I was back doing freelance sound, and that got old pretty fast because I'm not as young as I used to be, and going to warehouses and loading trucks and unloading trucks and setting up shows and doing shows and then taking the gear down, loading the trucks, going back to the warehouse, unloading the trucks. It's a young man's game.
Yeah.
So I needed to do something. And also, I was driving all over the Bay Area, and you've probably noticed that traffic in the Bay Area has gotten extraordinarily awful over the last 20 years, and the last five especially. So I just didn't want to be driving around with heavy equipment and 20-hour days anymore. So I was looking for something a little closer to home. And I did a few freelance gigs here and there, and I tried a couple different things, and I did some catering, and I drove a little bus, and that was back in the traffic, so that didn't last long. But I responded to an ad that was placed for an operations manager at Petaluma Community Access, and it was, had to do with the TV side. Mm-hmm. And I had some TV background. I had worked for ABC. I was a cameraman. I did audio. And I had some experience there. So I came in. I submitted my resume. I was interviewed by John and Cindy, and was there anybody else at that interview?
No, I think it was just John and I.
Yeah, and it turns out that I really wasn't qualified for what this job is, and I found that out after I started getting involved with making the radio station happen, because I didn't have the IT experience that was really necessary. Mm. It was a big part of it. I knew cameras and things like that, but that was a very small part of it, and I realized that right off. But so, actually, what happened was John brought back Stephanie, who had been here before.
All right.
And she came back, and he told me, well, that position's been filled, and it's not you, but we're trying to build a radio station, and maybe you'd like to help us do that. So, that was great. So I started that as a freelance, contract labor for a few months, and it was a dream that a lot of people had, and it was really nice to, number one, have a budget available to actually pull it off, and have a little start with the applicable construction permit that had been applied for. And so my first role was to create a memorandum of understanding for the KPCA or Petaluma Community Access to put a radio antenna on the SRJC Petaluma campus, because that's where the construction permit was applied for. That's where it had to go. But there was really no agreement that that would happen. So I had to do a memorandum of understanding, and I created one. It was great. There was a little online site where you pay $5, you get a template, and you fill it out according to your needs. And we did about 5 or 6 revisions of that, and we had our antenna agreement, and we were on our way. Ordered a bunch of studio gear. We had a stakeholders meeting where about 20 people showed up who were interested in participating in the radio station, wanting to do volunteer work or have shows, and it was kind of off and running.
Yeah.
And then the construction started happening, and, you know, John's office became the radio studio, and John had to move in with sharing another office. And it was that was a lot of fun, because I'm really good at that. I knew what kind of equipment to get, and I know how to do production. It was just another production. Like, you know, you have an end goal, and you have a timeline, and you work backwards, and I got to do this step and this step and this step. And it works. It works great. And I knew at some point John said, well, you know, we're not going to have you be a consultant anymore because we can't afford it. So maybe you'd like to come on as staff for lower pay. So I said, well, that's okay. Yeah, I love this. I mean, this is great. I can walk to work. I love what I'm doing. And, you know, I actually majored in radio and television when I was in college.
Oh, cool.
That surprised the heck out of me when I realized that, because I had forgotten that, because I didn't finish. I was working for a band, and they were going off to New York to record an album that Herbie Mann was producing, and I thought, college, New York, you know. I wasn't having a good time in college.
What was the band?
Didn't. The band was a band called Floating Opera, which was an Ann Arbor band. There's a lot of bands coming out of Ann Arbor, but it wasn't the typical hard rock kind of thing. It was more serious singer, songwriter, heavy duty musicianship, and singing. So
nice.
It was really, really nice. It was a great band to do sound for. And so I went and did that, and the radio and television major kind of went by the wayside. But so, you know, I grew up loving radio. I got a transistor radio for my birthday when I was 5 or something, one little earplug, and I would sit there and I'd go to bed at night and turn it on, put my earphone in, and listen to all these stations from all over the country. And it was fantastic. I just wanted to travel. So that's how I ended up doing all this traveling.
Yeah.
And it really bit me. And I listened to the radio all the time, doing chores around my family's house, you know, doing dishes at night after dinner, got the radio on at the time.
Wolfman Jack.
Well, we didn't have him, but we had, you know, we had our local, we had a great top 40 situation in Detroit.
Yeah.
There were 3 or 4 stations that were really vying for, you know, for supremacy, and there was a couple of really top DJs. And I loved it, and I really thought, well, I'd love to be able to do this, but I didn't think I had the talent for it, because all these guys on the radio, they had a shtick, they had really quick wit, just entertaining. They were showbiz people, and I was not. I was more technical kind of guy, so I can't do that. Now I've realized you don't need any of that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have good taste in music or whatever you want to do, if you do it right and prepare well, you can do something here. So, yeah, so it started off with like a 9-volt transistor radio battery.
Yep, me too.
Me too.
So.
Uh-huh.
So.
I guess you didn't do you, Jason.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's not old enough.
No, I mean, I was into radio. In fact, I had a CB radio when I was about 10 that my dad set me up with. And so I would communicate a little bit with that.
With truckers?
Yeah, it was weird. I mean,
exactly.
To be honest, it was a bit. I mean, I did it for a week, and it was like, okay, what do I have to talk
We're
about?
Learning stuff about
yeah,
people
I
today.
Know.
I've learned all these years, and
it's something new every week.
CB radio and
breaker.
Yep, and pipe bomb.
Well, my dad was a big ham radio enthusiast.
Well, that's great.
And then when CB became a thing, we had a CB radio in the car.
Uh-huh.
And then when he upgraded his CB radio, he gave me his old one. But I played around with it for a little bit and just didn't realize I had a lot to communicate about from my bedroom to these truckers mainly. Breaker 1-7, yeah. I remember some of that stuff. But I want to hear about all these bands that you worked with doing live sound. I'm curious how that was.
Oh, man, that's kind of... It's a long story, so I'll try to just remember parts of it as best as I can.
Was it the 60s? Because you know what they say about...
Well, the whole
if
thing...
If you can remember it, it means you weren't there.
No, the whole thing... the floating opera started in the late 60s.
Uh-huh.
And we did a couple trips, to Midwest, a little touring around there, and a couple trips to New York to record and perform. And then that band broke up, and half the band moved out to California. And I thought, well, I don't need to be in Ann Arbor anymore. Ann Arbor is a town where you could live in forever and be comfortable and have all kinds of things going because it's a college town and it's vibrant. But it was I wanted to experience more than that. So I'm okay, fine. We got a U-Haul van and my friend Artie his wife Fran and I moved out to California to San Francisco, got a place on Stanion Street, and I started just doing sound in clubs and learning how to do it really well, and seeing all these bands. And a band said, "Hey, we're going to go to we're doing a tour across the country. Maybe you want to be our tour manager?" Because I guess if you do sound. And then you also have a brain. You can tour manage, too. So they get actually two jobs done for the price of one. Took me a long time to realize that. So I could start upping my price. But so that was it. I drove across the country and did sound for this band. And when I came back, there was we did the opening of a club. The club was called Berkeley Square. And the people who built it, and the guys who put the sound system in said, "Well, we really like the way you do sound. Maybe you want to do sound here for us." And I said, "Sure." So I got a gig doing sound in a really nice club that had a great sound system. And all these bands were coming through, national acts and local acts. And the Blasters came through. And I really liked these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And So I told him, I said, "When you guys hire a sound guy, I want to be that guy. I want to go on the road with you." And a year later, they called me up, and they said, "Well, okay, we're finally ready to hire somebody, and why don't you come down to L.A. and see our show at the Whiskey, and then we'll talk about it. And then we have a show coming up in San Francisco, which was at the Bill Graham Civic." So I said, "Okay." And I did that, and I ended up working with these guys for almost 5 years.
Cool.
And driving around in a little van with a U-Haul trailer with the gear, and crisscrossing the states, every interstate end-to-end multiple times. 8 months out of the year, 9 months out of the year, they'd take a couple months off and record. And then I wouldn't have a job, so I would go out with some other band. And so that's the thing that happens is when you're in that business, there's very few people who are actually really good, at least at that time. You're at a premium. So all these bands going out, "Hey, who do you use? Can you, you know, can this guy go out with me?" And that whole L.A. scene, the Slash Records and with the X and Los Lobos and Dwight Yoakam, all those people, I would kind of go around and work with those different bands. And I just kept touring and touring. And I did that for 25 years.
Wow.
But there was other stuff in between. During that time, I started tour managing John Lee Hooker, and I stayed with him for over a 17-year span. It wasn't continuously on the road with John because he didn't work like that at that point. It was just a few days here, a couple weeks there. My first tour with him was actually in Japan.
Oh,
so,
cool!
Yeah, it was great. There's a lot of cool stuff that happens, and experiences that you get that there's no other way that you're going to ever have experiences like that.
Now, did you have family at this time?
No, except my family, that my father and my mother and my two sisters.
Because I know you have kids, and
I started late with that because one of the things I really noted while I was out there. Was I had friends and colleagues who had families, and I thought it was really kind of, I thought it was kind of sad, actually, that these guys would go out and be gone for 8 or 9 months out of the year, and they had little ones at home growing up, and they wouldn't see them, and they just show up, and you know, the kids grow up so fast, and if you're not there, if you're out for 6 months and then you come back, your kid's a different kid than it was six months ago, and then you're gone again, and this. And they're gone for years, you know, off a few weeks here and there. But if that's their life, you know, the road life perpetuates itself. You're not home. And so I pretty much decided that, yes, I did want a family, and I needed to get off the road. I was getting really burned out.
Yeah.
Really burned out by it. And so I made really big efforts to get off the road. And I did. I ended up working at this organization called Bread and Roses in Mill Valley, which is an organization that takes entertainment into people who are shut in, whether it's convalescent homes, rehabs, jails, you name it, where people can't leave, they bring music in. And
that's cool.
I was producing shows for them with two other people, and we would do about 60 shows a month, little ones. Like one or two performers, and take a little PA system in, sometimes not, just acoustic. And so I spent 2 weeks out of the month setting up these shows, and then the second 2 weeks going out and presenting these shows. And a lot of local performers, but at the same time, there would be some national people. People, you know, Bread and Roses was founded by Mimi Farina, who she was pretty famous for quite a while. And so we had some really high-level people that would come through. And I remember producing a show with Bonnie Raitt at a rehab in San Rafael. And it was like just a house with a living room with 8 or 9 people that were all going through various stages of recovery. And Bonnie had just kind of gone through that herself.
Right.
And so it was just an acoustic show. It was her with another guitar, a bass player, and her on acoustic guitar. And singing really from the heart for these people, because she'd been there. And it's that kind of stuff is just, it's incredible, the power of it. And there was other artists of that nature that we would go do shows with. So I did that for about 4 years. And I was still working in clubs, and doing sound at the Sweetwater in Mill Valley and things like that. And but the Bread and Roses thing and being settled, I found a wife.
Wow.
This was in Mill Valley?
Yeah.
And you were living there at the time?
Yeah. 88 to about 90, 80, 85, 86, 87, 88.
So when did you move? So then you moved out to Petaluma after that?
Way after that. Okay. Yeah. Because actually, I met my wife and Kelly. Hi, Kelly, if you're listening. She co-produced a show at the Greek Theater. For us. We did big festivals at the Greek Theater to support Bread and Roses. And she was hired as a hired gun to help co-produce this thing. And I guess that's where it started, folks. I waited until after the show was done and she was not working for us anymore, and then I asked her out. And
she said yes.
She was a little uncertain, I think, but she did. And so, you know, I was kind of, okay, I was still going out on the road, but little short trips with, like, jazz artists at that time, which was really great, because jazz artists go to a town, and maybe they'll sit there for 4 or 5 days. It's not one-nighters all the time. Mm-hmm. It can be, but a lot of times you're there three or four days.
Right.
And sometimes, if you're lucky, the club is in the hotel where you're staying. It was a lot easier. The only hard part was doing a tour managing with double basses, big things, And actually, I did one that was a co-tour, Diana Krall and Christian McBride. So I had two bands with two of these things.
Wow.
And we're going on airplanes and that. That was kind of it.
Did you ever have situations where the gear was damaged during a flight?
I did have situations where the gear was lost.
Yeah, that can be really difficult because you got a gig coming up and the bass didn't show up.
What happened when I was with Booker T and the MGs and Steve Cropper's guitar never made it.
Wow.
And, he was resourceful enough and we had, he was able to get guitars. But this was a guitar that was made for him.
Yeah.
And The weird part was, like, the airline lost it. Something happened, and so since I was in touch with the airline, you know, please, you know, when it shows up, deliver it to this hotel. Well, it turns out they did, but nobody ever informed me.
Oh, shit.
You know, they just took it to the hotel. The bellman put it in a closet, and I never knew anything about it.
Oh, no.
So we left. You know, I'm still in touch with the airline. Where's the guitar? The guitar, yeah, we delivered it. No, I never got it, you know.
Geez.
I'm in another town, you know, and I called back to the hotel. Oh, yeah, we got this thing. It's in the bell closet. So it took like 3 or 4 days for Steve's guitar to catch up with him. So, but I didn't really experience a lot of damaged gear, rained on gear.
Mm-hmm.
There's times when, you know, the stuff got rained on, and like with the blasters, we did the very first Farm Aid show, and it rained on us, and the gear got soaking wet. And the band, after that, flew back to L.A., and I'm driving with the merchandise guy back to L.A. with this van and with the trailer full of wet gear. So at some point, when it was dry and sunny, we just stopped, pulled all the gear out, took the piano apart, the drums, everything, put them all over the lawn of some place, some building somewhere, and let it dry out. And here comes this guy in this truck, and you know, people were coming by. Are you selling this stuff? Are you having this? No, but some guy, what was it, the Red Allen Band or something, he came by, and he knew exactly what we were doing. He says, "Oh, you got cut in the rain, huh?" You know, so yes, you know, it's just stuff.
Do you ever have any prop malfunctions, any kind?
No,
the bands you were working with didn't have a lot of props.
No, they were just, you know, Byron bashers for the most part. Yeah. You know, not although I did work for a sound company out of LA, and they did have a huge amount of effects.
Yeah,
the band was called Big Country.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, and
they had a hit.
And they had maybe two, and they were good. They were good. Although I had some reservations about because their music was not my cup of tea. But I'm working for a sound company. I'm trying to climb my way up in the industry. And here you go. Here's your band. You're going out with these guys. I also went out with the Clash with that company. So you know there was the good and the bad. But this band, Big Country, when I asked because I was going to do monitors for them. On stage, or on stage, or not out in the front of house. And I asked their production manager, he says, well, what is this, you know, what is your show like? What's your music? And he went on this great, great story about how great the show was. He didn't tell me anything about the music or what I needed to expect doing my part of the show.
Oh, boy.
He went and he said, well, we've got this great backdrop, and it's got the castle, and then the castle changes, and there's water around the castle, and then the fields of fire. That was another
story. No Stonehenge model?
No, that was a Stonehenge model. But, he just went on and on about the props and the light show and all the stuff, and didn't tell me anything about the band. At all, but you know, I did two tours with them, and it was okay. It wasn't my cup of tea. But at the end of the, you know, there's always pranks at the end of a tour.
Mm-hmm.
The last show, there's always weird stuff that, you know, the crew does things to each other, to the band. The Blasters did they opened for Eric Clapton on a tour, and the last show, the crew put a bunch of stuff up in the rigging, like, I don't know, balloons, shoes, clothing, whatever, just piles of stuff. and so at the end of the concert, they just drop all this stuff onto the stage. And, of course, it didn't fall on Eric. Maybe he was wise to what was going on. But at the finale, Phil Alvin from the Blasters was sitting in with the band and singing. And it all fell on him.
Oh, great. I think that was deliberate.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Paid somebody.
I'm sure it was. But Phil never missed a beat. That was the great part. He just kept going.
Now, do you play an instrument?
I was playing guitar for a while. You know, I played when I was in high school. I was in a band because every kid in high school has a guitar or a drum or something and is in a band. And, you know, we did a couple backyard parties and played a couple high school dances. And I figure the most successful thing that happened when I was in a band was that there I was playing in a party and backyard thing at my house, I guess, and the police came.
Oh, cool.
So I thought that was really successful, that I had a party and played in the band.
Not the band, the police.
And the police came.
No. It wasn't the band.
Yeah. So that's cool. But do you play anymore, though?
I haven't played since I got this job.
But you have guitars still.
I've got a couple of guitars.
What, acoustic, electric?
I have an electric guitar, and I have a really nice old Epiphone acoustic guitar that was given to me by the widow of a friend of mine that we toured with, actually. And it's a beautiful instrument. It had been damaged and repaired, it's kind of ugly in a way, but it's got a lot of heart and soul, and it sounds really nice. It's an old archtop guitar.
Oh, nice.
1948.
So that's probably, is that pre-Gibson?
Gibson was one of the, it was a preeminent.
Yeah, because Epiphone was a big competitor of Gibson.
Right.
And in fact, I think at one point they were kind of a higher end model. And then, of course, Gibson acquired them, and now Epiphone is sort of the.
It's the lower tier.
Yeah. Interesting how that happens.
Yeah. Same design as the Gibsons, but they're not as quite.
And what's the electric you play?
It's a Guild. It's called a Guild Starfire. Oh, it's nice. About a 1962 or something.
Oh, you've got some classics.
Yeah.
So, Janice, didn't I tell you that Jason was going to enjoy this?
Yes. Yeah. Did.
Well,
our listeners, Jason is a musician himself, so I knew he was going
to
enjoy this.
But I can always talk about guitars.
Is this interesting to anybody but us?
I don't know. I get feedback from people on the shows. They like this.
Some of the racier stuff that ever happened or some issues, that, I don't know, anything that happened... artist behavior, overindulgence, anything you can share.
Of course. Sharing that is hard.
Be careful about that.
That's one of the things.
You don't have to name names, but there's one incident in particular I think the listeners might be curious about.
No, that's one of the things is when you're doing this work at that level, you really have a sense of propriety and and you really it's part of that. People hear stories, and most of them are true.
Yeah.
You know? And some of them are even far beyond what you could ever imagine. But you don't really talk about them much because that's your livelihood. And
that was your livelihood.
You go, oh, you know, you wouldn't believe what happened, on this tour, and you start telling these stories. You're not going to get as many calls for work because it can't be trusted.
Yeah. But you don't do that kind of work anymore, so you can spill the beans now.
Jason, you're really egging him on.
Well, there's some stories I can tell that they're not.
You told me one story about an artist who maybe had a little bit too much to drink at a gig or something. But
that's a lot of them.
But I'm not going to get any more specific than that without your authorization.
Which one was that? Let's see.
Can I talk about initials?
No.
But
something to do with drums.
Someone got sick on
a drum kit.
Oh, that story. Yeah. No, there was a famous singer that I was doing production for, and I don't want to go into that. But he was noted for drinking a lot of wine, and he kind of lost it on the drum kit during a concert.
But the gig went off still, right? It was all okay?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you one story that I think is very charming and endearing to me. When I was out with John Lee, the way it worked was, the tour manager, and this was before cell phones and laptops and everything else. So I'm having a notebooks of paper and itineraries, and you do your advance work. You're on the road, and you do a show, and then you do your accounting for that show and your advance for the next couple shows if you have a couple days off or a day off or an afternoon off. And I was in a town one day with John. We had done a few shows and we had a few more to go and we had a day off. And so John had everybody had their own rooms and I'm in there. And the way it worked then was you had too much paperwork to spread around a little on a desk. So you got paperwork spread over your bed and I'm calling on advancing my shows, doing my paperwork. And that takes 2 or 3 or 4 hours. And while I was doing that, I had the TV on in the background. It was Robert Mitchum's birthday.
Hmm.
And So it was just kind of going. It was just white noise in the background. And the station was playing all Robert Mitchum all day, Robert Mitchum movies. So it's kind of going on. I finished my paperwork a few hours later, and I'm going to go check on John, see how he's doing. So I go down to his room, and he's sitting there in bed, and he's got his little, some Chinese food or something somebody had brought, and he's sitting there, and he's watching this Robert Mitchum, this channel with all these Robert Mitchum movies, and I go, well, hi, John, how you doing? And, what you up to? And he goes, oh, well, I'm just watching the TV, watching the Robert Mitchum. And I says, oh, yeah, I'm watching that same thing. He says, oh, that Robert Mitchum. Hey, I like that Robert Mitchum. He's real good. He's a real good actor. But this is a long movie. he was a cowboy and then he was in the army and now he's a private eye because it was one long movie for John and it was like, wow, that's really, that touched me.
Did you ever get to play with him?
I did not, no. But I was really good at, since I had a career as a sound guy, and I was his tour manager, and at that time in his career, he was doing a lot of festivals. And the way a festival works is you know, there's all these acts, and the band before you goes off, and you go on, and you have like 10 minutes or 15 minutes to set up your gear and get your levels and your monitors, and it's pretty intense. And I was really good at it because I could get the band set up. I knew how to do that. I'd done a lot of stage work, and I knew how to mix monitors. So I could go around to each position and get monitor levels for all the musicians. It took me 5 minutes. I just worked with the monitor guy, this, and this level, this, and this monitor, and I nailed it every time. And so the band would come out and play, and the sound would be really great, and they were really happy. And so they do a couple intro songs, and then my job was to bring John out and get him situated. He's sitting in a chair at that point. And I'd hand him his guitar and just make sure that everything was fine, and then he'd go ahead and do his show. And so it really worked for me in that position to do that gig because I could do the sound and I could do the tour managing. So I think that's why, one of the reasons why I was there for 17 years doing that. So.
I had forgotten he was in the Blues Brothers movie.
Yes, he was.
That's very cool. So you knew him before then? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he died in Los Altos.
Yep, that was one of his houses. He, poor John. People, he had relatives and friends, and he'd live in a place, and then his friends and relatives would move in, and it'd be like a lot going on. And he didn't have the heart to say, well, everybody got to get out. He would just go to a new house and get a new house. And so he started he was in the Vallejo, and then he was in Redwood City. And that house filled up, and so he moved to Los Altos, and so that was at the end. So, and I visited him actually on my daughter's first birthday. Wow. We went to her yearly. She was born. I was working. This is another thing I didn't even tell you, but that doesn't matter. I was working down in near San Jose for 3 years as a tech director at a event center, and so we had Nadia. Down at Stanford. So
your daughter?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we went down for her yearly, her 1 year checkup, and that's not far from Los Altos. So let's go visit John. So we went over to John's house, and I got a photograph of her was sitting on John's knee, and he's singing Happy Birthday to her.
Oh,
wow.
Birthday.
Wow.
So, that's precious.
And she's
cool.
Like one. She rolled with it. She rolled with it.
He had 8 children and 19 grandchildren.
There's Jason.
At least.
Stalking on his computer again.
Some of them are performers. John Lee Jr. is a performer. Zakiya is a performer. Yeah.
Interesting.
They're good.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty cool thing. Yeah.
We've been talking with Rob Tomaszewski, our KPCA radio station manager, and also known as Radio Rob, here on Inside Petaluma. And I want to thank you for being here.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about the radio station much, did we?
Yeah, I think it would be worth it to let the listeners know how they can make their own radio show if they want to.
Well, the first thing you do is come by and you have to become a member. You have to live in Petaluma. You have to come by and become a member of Petaluma Community Access. And there is a membership fee associated, and there's varying levels. And then you can be trained on the video, because there is PCA that has the TV side and the radio station, KPCA. And we will train you on the equipment. For people who want to do video, they can come in and check out gear, go out and shoot footage, and come back and edit on editing suites. We teach you how to do it. And then it goes up on our channel, our cable channels. And or else, now it's going up on YouTube and everything else. I think people are putting stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
And with the radio, we train you in the studio. We have a little auxiliary studio, B, where we do production work. And we offer training, and you can come in and create a show and practice. We have a practice time in the studio. And if you prepare well enough, like if you have a talk show, you line up guests, you want to be sure that you prepare well enough to have a guest, ready and to come on and know what's going on with that. Or music show, you prepare your music. You know, some people come in and just go by the seat of their pants playing CDs.
Or they have talk records. Shows like that.
And preparation. Very few people can go by the seat of their pants and pull it off. And we have one character who can. And but the music is almost secondary to what he says while he's playing.
No kidding. We're talking about Steve?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Red Peace Dark. Oh, we have some great programmers here.
Yeah.
I listen to this show, and to the shows here, and I'm amazed at how good the programmers are, the content of the shows, whether it's talk shows. The talk shows are interesting, really interesting. Maybe, I don't know, for this one today, I'm not so sure.
Oh, come on.
I'm interested.
But yeah, I am. Yeah.
But there's a lot of really interesting content and stuff that you wouldn't believe that you can do on the radio. Darian's Pilates show, I listen to that show and I end up sitting up straighter and, it's like amazing.
Yeah, I need to listen.
And
to
you listen to Katie's, she's doing tarot cards, tarot
psychic
readings.
Yeah.
Psychic readings on the radio. And you have that, and then you've got some great music. From some really dedicated programmers, and it's starting to get some traction. It's starting to settle in. The scheduling has changed. There's some open spots, folks. I've got 4 hours on Tuesdays, 4 hours on Thursdays in the afternoons for music shows, especially. So, come on down. I've got some new guys coming in. We had a guy come in. A college student just came in a couple weeks ago. He had been trolling through the dial. He heard us, and he said, I like this. So he came in. He says, can I volunteer here?
Cool.
Well, I grabbed him, and I gave him the tour, and I brought him in, and Dino Portes was doing his show, and I brought him in and sat him in with Dino. I mean, I wasn't going to let this guy go, because one of the things I'm really working at this station is youth. I'm trying to get a lot of young people involved. It's really important for me, because there's a lot of folks who have great record collections who are older, and they play their great record collections, but I need to cultivate the younger people, because I have to keep it going, because the older folks at some point are going to go away.
Right.
And so I have this guy, and I brought him in, and he's sitting there with Dino, and Dino's doing his show, and 10 minutes later, Dino says, well, okay, I've got him. He's going to be doing a jazz show. So it's just, I love it. And so, Ethan, I'm looking forward to having you here and learning how to do this stuff. So we do offer trainings, and I have a training coming up in 2 weeks. But it's full, folks, because everybody wants to be on the radio. So get in touch with us. Get in touch with us, Petaluma Community Access. We have a website.
PCA.tv.
And the radio website, which is...
KPCA.fm.
Yeah. You can find us. And, we're on Keller Street, and it's easy to find.
I think it's worth mentioning also that you don't have to make a radio show or a TV show to be a member of PCA, but you should support us by becoming a member, because we're important. We're an important part of the community. What other services can we provide if there was an emergency?
Well, we are part of the Emergency Operations Center for the city of Petaluma. And so when there is a city emergency and that center is activated, we are notified.
And you, the listeners, get the benefit of being in the know of what's going on.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Also, I want to mention at pca.tv, you can support us by making a donation. You don't necessarily have to become a member and pay annual dues, but you can support us in other ways, like just making that little donation to help us keep afloat.
It's very important in the community radio these days. There's a real strong community radio movement in this country. It's very strong. And they're so important, these little stations, these little community stations. It's what, you know, because the big corporate stuff isn't, doesn't address what the community needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, all these little community stations around here, around the country, are so valuable. And we get a lot of support. And we are members of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. We offer a lot, and a lot of community service. And we get a lot of word out from other nonprofits, people who come in and come on our talk shows and tell us what's going on and on their end of the world. So, yeah, it's critical. It's critical to have here. And it's a great station.
Yeah.
So,
and if you can't afford to support us financially, we have volunteer opportunities here as well. We can always use a little elbow grease here and there for various projects that continue to happen here. This station's always busy. There's never a time you walk in here and there's nobody here. We've always got something going on. It's great.
Yep.
That's a great value. Anyway, thanks again for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What's everybody going to do for this weekend?
Oh, I've got this Sonoma County Transfer SCTA event, gala, tomorrow night.
Yeah.
5 to on. The environmental group.
The Art and Garden Festival is on in downtown Petaluma on Sunday.
Yep.
Go down and spend lots of money, see lots of people.
Have
fun.
There's a table there, I think, aren't
there? Good music is going to be there.
Oh,
are you?
Yeah,
I think so.
Oh, yeah, and the music is the orchestra, the Joe Cocker. The Mad Dogs and Englishmen show.
Really?
Yeah, they're playing.
Yes,
space
sure.
Orchestra.
Huh.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Oh, yeah.
I'm aging myself after listening to this discussion about all these bands. Really.
Want to go to the festival on Sunday?
I do. I'll go with you.
Are you going to bring Coco, the Wonder Dog?
Maybe Coco, the Wonder Dog. maybe not. It just depends on what's on her calendar.
All right. So we've been lucky enough to visit with Rob Tomaszewski, our KPCA radio station manager today. And I've been here. I'm Cindy Thomas, by the way. I co-host Inside Petaluma with Janice Gator Thompson and Jason Davies. And we will be back next Thursday.
Friday.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? I do that all the time.
Because you have a show on.
Last night, I have a radio show. It's called Let's Jam on Thursday nights from 7 to 9. And last night, when I opened up the show, I said, "Welcome to Inside Petaluma."
That's a good plug. We appreciate that.
Yeah, so, okay, for music, come see me on Thursday night, 7 to 9, right here at 103.3 FM or on kpca.fm, where we stream live all the time. And on Fridays, come back and see the three of us and whoever else we might have on next week. Well, I know who we're going to have on next week. We're going to have Matt McGuire on next week to talk about Lafferty Park. So.
Who's going to show up?
Yes.
Whoa.
You heard that.
Okay.
Hey, who's going to came in.
Where can they go to hear past shows, Jason?
InsidePetaluma.com.
Okay. All right. Oh, and we have a Facebook page, KPCA Inside Petaluma.
And you can get to all of that from InsidePetaluma.com. Yeah. It's one easy way.
Go to our Facebook page and like us. We're really likable.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we are.
We
okay.
Try.
Thanks again, Rob. See you all later.
See you next week.
Bye.
Great.